How's it going? Good, great. All right, good. All right. So, I'm sure that most of you, or all of you probably, were here this morning and heard Eddie's sermon. And he started off by asking, why are we here? As in church. Why are we here in church? And I thought that that was a really valid question, that we don't really think about a lot. And I think it's true to say that even though a lot of us may be going to church for the right reasons and getting a lot out of it, that if someone asked us why we went to church, maybe before this morning, that we might not be able to articulate an answer, even though we believe with all of our heart that it's the right thing to do. Last week, Keith gave a lesson about studying to show yourself approved. And he talked about studying the scripture and fact-checking everything, which is important as well. And that's why we can take a simple question like, why do we go to church and study it so much and learn something new from it? So that's kind of what I wanted to do tonight. I wanted to take a simple question that we've probably maybe asked ourselves before, or maybe thought of, but ask it again and maybe put a new angle on it or just give you my thoughts on it. So, well, actually, I have more than one question. Two questions. I'm going to talk about the second one a little more. But my first question that I have for you tonight might seem like a really simple one, but there's a lot behind it, and I think a lot of consideration should be going into this question. So my question for us is, why are we Christians? Now I want you to give it a minute and just think about this in your head. I'm not going to ask you to answer it out loud, but I just want you to consider, if someone asked you why you're a Christian, or why you believe in God, what you would say to them. Okay, cool. Long enough. Now, I want you to know that this question doesn't have one correct answer. I think our belief in God and our reason for being a Christian is a very personal thing that can be very different for everyone. I wanted to share with you my reason that I have for now, because who knows, it could change. So, my first reason that I am a Christian is that I look at the Bible and I see historical records, and I think that it makes sense personally. I have kind of considered the possibility that God isn't the way, and maybe he doesn't exist, but after thinking about it, I really do think that the evidence is there. That's not to say that I think there's solid physical evidence that God exists, but I think that God has created so many things throughout creation and put so many clues as to his existence that it's evident, at least to me. But more than that, I also believe in God because I feel like I really have felt his hand in my life. I feel like I can really say that at times I felt the comfort of God, or I felt God's joy. Psalms 19:1 says that the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. And Romans 1:20 says, for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. And I think that those two verses are true as well, and that's kind of the third thing that leads me to believe in God. I really do think that nature and the beauty of nature really point to God. That's something that I can see God in, is nature. So this question, why do we believe in God, I think is a simple one, but I think it's something that we don't really give consideration very much. And now I think that a lot of us in this room, probably most of us or all of us, really do have a solid reason for believing in God and a solid faith. But like I said earlier, sometimes when we don't ask ourselves these questions, I think that they can become kind of hard to articulate, and we kind of forget exactly what those reasons are ourselves. All right, so now for my second question. That first question was kind of just a warm-up. So the second question, this is the real deal. So the second question that I have for you tonight is, what is our purpose? Now, I don't mean what is our purpose as a church in Ventura. I don't mean what is our purpose even as Christians. I want to know what our purpose is as humans, humanity. Why did God create us? I think that's kind of the, age-old question that has been asked by everyone, by philosophers. You know, why are we here? And I think the answer to this question is actually something that when we study the Bible, we can see it right in front of our noses. And I think like our noses, it's so close to us that sometimes, even though we can see it, we kind of forget that it's there. Did you ever notice that? That you can like see your nose even though you don't think about it? Anyway, so now before I start talking about this more, I want to give a little disclaimer. So this is something that I have reflected on and something that I've noticed, but of course I'm not, 100% right all the time. None of us are. I'm probably like 90 or 85%, if even that, I don't know. But what I'm trying to say is that if there's something missing in what I say right now, that's my fault, just because I'm human. But I really do think that, I guess what I've found when studying the scriptures has a lot of truth to it. And hopefully maybe it is right. Maybe it's even 100% right. I don't know. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is take what I say with a grain of salt. And like Keith said a week ago, fact check everything. Go back in the scriptures and check and see if I'm right. Or prove me wrong and tell me where I was wrong. So where I found the answer to this question that I'm asking, why did God make us? I found the answer actually in while I've been planning lessons for the teens this summer. So this summer with the teens, we've been going over the Old Testament. So actually everything I'm going to say right now is probably something that Ben back there has heard already, but oh well, he just gets to hear it twice, so that's good. So we've been going through the Old Testament, and I'm not trying to make it like a survey, because if we did the whole Old Testament in one summer, that would just be way too much for teens, honestly way too much for probably anyone, unless we were doing it like every day for a couple of hours. So we've been taking it slow. And today, this morning, we actually went over Leviticus. Yep, Eddie's shaking his head because he was there. We went over Leviticus. And I know you're probably thinking, Leviticus, isn't that that book with all the laws and the really boring and it took forever to read? And when I read the Bible, like the whole Bible in 1 year, that's the one book that I just needed to like marathon through. And yeah, so we went through Leviticus. But even though it does have, just a ton of laws and different ceremonies that God laid out for Israel, it's really important in the story of Israel as a whole. And I'll explain why a little bit more later. So I think it would be best, since I have been going through the story of God, the story of Israel, that I should start at the beginning, since that's where stories start. So we all know how it starts. In the beginning, God made the heavens and the earth, right? God made everything, and then he made us. He made humanity. And things were good for about a minute. Because then humanity, as we tend to do, we messed everything up. So before we messed everything up, we were able to coexist with God in the same space, and things were good. Things were very good, as God said, after we created humans. But after we sinned, God begrudgingly kicked Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden. But before he kicked them out, he made a promise. God, speaking to the serpent, he said, "I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and her offspring, and he shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel." Now, I didn't write this down, but I think that is Genesis 3 something. You can check it for me. I don't know. There we go. Three something is right. So a lot of people have kind of seen this actually as possibly the first prophecy that's in the Bible. So this snake crusher person, what was it? 3:15. There we go. So this snake crusher person is going to save humanity from evil, since that's what this snake represents. He's the embodiment of evil. But in turn, the snake is supposed to strike his heel. So the snake strikes that person down as well. And I think we see a little bit of God's purpose for humanity in this story. So when God created Adam and Eve, he created them to be stewards of the earth. He created them to work with the animals and work with the land in Eden. But that's not the whole purpose that I found. So further down the line, we're going to skip ahead a little bit, and there's this guy named Abram, who I'm sure you've heard of, who's later renamed Abraham, and God gives Abram a promise, okay? So he promises Abraham that he'll make his descendants into a great nation, and he promises land to him as well. He promises that they'll settle in the land of Canaan, and he also promises that he'll restore his blessing to Abraham and his people, the blessing that they had originally when Adam and Eve were in the garden. So he promises those things to them, and I think here it's kind of clear, we start to see this theme of God's love, this theme that pervades throughout the whole Bible. Is God's love and forgiveness, because even though humanity blew it, right, even though we disobey God and we distance ourselves from him, he still promises that he will love us and take care of us, and he promises that he'll restore his blessing to us. So again, skip ahead with me a few hundred years to the story of Exodus, because if I tried to say everything in between, it would take too long and we'd be here all night. So let's pick it up right after God uses Moses to deliver the Israelites from Pharaoh. So we'll start right after the Israelites have gone through the Red Sea. The Red Sea, you know, closed and crushed Pharaoh's army and everything. So at this point, the Israelites are in the desert. And they're kind of worse for wear. So the Israelites at this point remember that age-old promise that was made to their ancestor, right, Abraham. But that's almost like a long distant memory. But God has finally started to deliver on his promise. He's finally, you know, he rescued them from the hands of the Egyptians. But even still, they grumble against God. Even after God has shown him his grace, they grumble against him and they say, man, you know, in Egypt we were slaves, but I mean, we had good food and it was good, even though it wasn't that good. But God, intending to fulfill his promise to Abraham, he gives them good food, and he takes them to Mount Sinai, where he finally asks them to be in this covenant relationship with him. And this right here is where you kind of start to see God's purpose in humanity restored. And I'll explain that more in a minute, too. So God invites Israelites into this covenant relationship with him, and he says that if they follow all the laws that he gives to them, that they'll become the people who will represent God to the rest of the world, but even more, he will dwell among them again. So the Israelites agree to this. They say, all right, sounds good. So they agree to all the terms and conditions they sign at the bottom and everything, and God says, okay, he had already given them the terms and conditions. He gave them the Ten Commandments and all the commandments to go with it. And then he gives Moses all these specifications for this special tent that God is actually going to go into so he can live among the Israelites again. And this is a pretty pivotal moment here. So God is finally going to be with his people again in this tent called the Tabernacle, right? That was right? Yeah. So God's giving Moses these instructions, but before Moses can even make it down the mountain, Israel screws up again, right? And it's kind of like, we knew this was coming. It happens all the time. They keep on screwing up. So what do? They build a golden calf, right? They convince Aaron to build them because they're used to worshiping idols since they've been in Egypt. And so this does a couple things. But mainly, it makes God angry and sad and breaks his heart all at the same time. Because if you remember, in the Ten Commandments, what were the first two? The first one was, actually, I think I'm getting the first two mixed up. But it's, you shall have no other gods before me, and you shouldn't worship idols. You can't worship idols. I don't remember which one was first, which one was second. But there were the first two. Regardless, there were the first two. It's not like there were numbers 7 and 8 or anything like that. They were the first two. And it's the day after, and they break them. The first two. The first thing God said not to do, they do it. So you can imagine how this would make God feel. One thing that I've seen this compared to a lot, I've seen, I guess, the relationship between Israel and God compared to a marriage, right? Israel is described as the bride of God. And so when they first enter into this covenant relationship, that's kind of like a marriage. And so if you imagine, this is the day after Israel breaks that covenant. So it's kind of akin to a bride cheating on her husband on the night of the honeymoon. So this should be the happiest time, right? They finally are together and things are good, but Israel goes and does the worst thing imaginable. So God, as you might imagine, is pretty upset with Israel at this point. And he's actually going to kill Israel. But Moses says, hey, you know, probably shouldn't do that. You can forgive him instead. So God says, okay, I'll forgive them. Because God is gracious and he still cares about his people. So God, since he's forgiven them, he allows them to continue through with this plan to build this temple for him to live in. So they build the temple, and he finally goes down and he is there. He's dwelling among them once again. So now things are good again, right? God is finally dwelling among his people. Except things aren't good quite yet. Even though God has forgiven them, they used to be able to go into God's presence, but now they can't because they've damaged that relationship between Israel and God. So at the end of Exodus, Moses actually tries to go into the tabernacle, but he can't because the relationship is still damaged. So earlier I said that Leviticus made me think about God's purpose for creating humanity, and this upcoming is why. So Exodus tells about how Israel finally enters into the covenant relationship and how they blew it again. And Leviticus, with all its rules and ceremonies, is really about how Israel can get into a right relationship with God again. And if you actually, I guess, read through and you read through Numbers, you see at the beginning of Numbers, it works. And Moses is able to enter into the temple again. They fix that relationship. In Leviticus chapter 19, God tells Moses to tell the people, "You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy," right? Now, to be holy means to be pure and fully good. And in order for the Israelites to enter into the presence of God again, they have to become pure and blameless too. Otherwise, if they go into God's presence, if they go into God's presence without becoming fully pure and blameless, without purifying themselves, then they'll die. And you actually see this in Exodus. There are a couple of priests that go into God's presence without purifying themselves first, and God's presence is so pure and holy that they die. I don't know if they're disintegrated, I don't know what, but they die. So in order for Israelites to really be with God again, they have to become pure and blameless. And after studying Leviticus, this is where it really cemented I guess, this purpose that we've been talking about, humanity's purpose for me. Because in Leviticus, God is outlining all these things that Israel has to do in order to become pure and blameless again, right? So Leviticus, even though it's a ton of rules and it's a ton of reading, Leviticus is really about God saying, here, even though you messed up several times, I still want to be in a relationship with you. I still want you to be my people. So for you to be my people, these are the things you have to do. And so he didn't have to give them these things, right? He didn't have to allow them to be his people because they broke the covenant. He could have, you know, done away with them and started over and gotten someone else to be his people again. But he forgave them and he said, you know, Israel, I love you and I want to be with you. And that's, I guess, kind of where I found the purpose of this story. Because even from the beginning, in the Garden of Eden, God wanted to be with his people. God created us so that he could be with us and so that we could be with him, right? So that's what we see in the Garden of Eden when we see Adam and Eve with God. And then even after they mess up, he comes back to Abraham and he gives him this promise and he says, hey, I'm going to be with you again. You know, don't worry, you will be my people. And we see this however many thousand years ago up until today. God still wants us to be his people. But now us is a little more general, right? God isn't just saying Israel. Now he opens the door for all of us to finally be his people, to be able to be with God. So I was kind of thinking about how to apply Leviticus to today, and I was thinking all the things that God tells the Israelites to do in Leviticus, all the ceremonies, all the sacrifices, he tells them to do so that they can be more holy, right? So that they can be with him. And so I think that kind of applies to us as Christians, because even though Christianity isn't, you know, a religion that just tells us to follow rules, the rules that God does lay out for us aren't, you know, just so we won't do bad things, he doesn't say things just to make it hard for us, right? He gives us these rules and regulations to make ourselves more holy so that we can be closer to him. And that's what I think this whole purpose of humanity is. Our purpose is to be with God. And that's where Christianity comes in, right? If we think about our purpose as Christians, I guess you can kind of think of this as kind of a third question I'm asking you. All right, so what is our purpose as Christians? It's to be God's light to the world, right? It's to tell everyone about God, because God doesn't want just us. He doesn't want just the Ventura Church of Christ to be his people. He doesn't want just the people in America to be his people. He wants everyone that is able to be his people. And so I kind of just want to leave you here with that today. I want to leave you with some encouragement. When we leave here, I want you to remember that what we're doing when we read the Bible and when we try to repent of whatever sin we've been struggling with, we're not just trying to follow rules. We're really trying to be more holy so that we can be a part of the oldest and the greatest love story of all time. And as we end here tonight, I want you to remember that God desperately wants to be in a relationship with us. And it's my hope and prayer that you guys feel the same way about him. So let's stand and sing.